and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
Alrighty, we do have an appropriate professional in the studio today. Welcome to New Retirement Radio. Mr. Dennis Prout from Prout Financial Design is in the house, and we have a special show today. I will turn the mic over to Mr. Prout.
Good morning, Ron. Thank you. It's a little bit of a delay there. Ron's handing me the mic because we've got three guests in today, and I'm so excited to have them joining us. Of course, today is the 30th of July. Now, the reason we've got these three gentlemen, before I introduce them to you all, is transitions. Wilmington Trust did a survey back in 2017 of 200 business owners. 58% of them, we can just call it 60%, have not created a specific plan, despite the fact that long-term transition planning usually results in higher business values, lower taxes, and so on. 78% of business owners who do not have a plan say the main reason is that they enjoy running their company. They're involved in the operation, and I get that. I mean, we're not necessarily thinking about those things like transitions. 47% of business owners over age 65 do not have a specific transition plan, even though starting the transition planning process early in the life of the business has been shown to lead to better outcomes. And then lastly, 67% of business owners believe that they have a very good idea of their company's worth, but two-thirds of them also want to talk to an expert about valuation. So it just shows, boy, there is a lot of unknowns about this transition process. And for me personally, watching Bill Marsh Sr. run his business and transition, I thought, would be a great way to bring home these gentlemen's personal experiences with that in story. So we want to do that here today. I called Bill Marsh Jr. about 4 weeks ago or so. Kind of nervous about it, frankly. I was hoping he'd say yes, because I've been thinking about this for about a year now. Kind of going through it. And then I heard you on the radio with Crystal about that same 4 weeks ago. And it just, piqued my interest, and I want to see if I can have these guys on talking about this. And he enthusiastically said yes. So we gathered together last week in our office, heard your stories, and I've already told them this morning that I've gained so much more hearing your stories than what I ever thought. And it was way beyond my own expectations of hearing your transition, how you came to come to Traverse City, all those kinds of things. So we want to start with the beginnings. But first, we've got all three Marshes. I call them the trifecta. And I've told colleagues that we've got Bill Marsh Jr., Jamie Marsh, and Mike Marsh. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining us. This culminates, obviously, a lot of thought on our part. And we've certainly worked on it, but we want to hear your stories. And one of the first ones that we want to hear in story, your experience, of course, is moving from Pennsylvania to Traverse City.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill. Well, the first transition, you were talking about transition, really the very first transition in the history of the family business happened in 1958 in Newtown, Pennsylvania. See, my dad always used to say, I never chose the car business. The car business chose me. And it was not a planned transition. It was kind of a transition, almost an emergency transition. He graduated from Yale University as a history major in 1958, entered law school in the fall of 1958. In the meantime, his father, our grandfather, who was in the auto finance business, called on dealerships, retired from there and bought a small Ford dealership in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, Newtown, Pennsylvania. And things went okay for about 6 months. My dad, meanwhile, was in law school about an hour away, came home for Thanksgiving and found out that things were not going well, that my grandfather's health was starting to fail, the business was failing. And he did what any honorable son would do. He dropped out of law school and entered this undercapitalized business with no experience, a history major, studying the law. And it was a crucible. He talked about how he used to work 7 days a week and wore all the hats in the dealership and had to sometimes wholesale cars on Thursday to make payroll on Friday. It was a very difficult transition.
Wow.
And that's how it started, actually.
So almost trial by fire.
Yeah.
Right in the middle
of
it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And, but he never, even though as the 50s turned into the 60s and the business began to grow, and he discovered, number one, that he liked it, and he had a lot of leadership skills, and the business started to do better, especially when the Ford came out with the Mustang in 64?
Yeah, 64.
And, found that I really like this, but... at the same time, he never really resonated with living in it was becoming a sprawling suburb,
Part of Pennsylvania was that?
Northeast Pennsylvania, about 50 miles outside of Philadelphia. Okay. It's now a big suburb. Back then, it was a very small dealership.
Okay.
And so that's how things started. And so maybe you want to talk a little about how we discovered Traverse City.
And he's talking to Jamie here.
Sure. Well, he was involved in some dealer councils with Ford Motor Company and became friends with Julius Sletter, who was then the Ford dealer here in Traverse City, and they became friends. And he visited Traverse City on multiple occasions. And and I remember him coming back one time late 70s, and walked in and said, I don't know when, I don't know how, but one of these days we're going to move to Traverse City, Michigan. And of course, we were young kids, and we had no idea where Traverse City was.
Yeah,
we grew
exactly.
up in outside
fact,
of Philadelphia.
Fact, Mike,
life,
I remember so. Mike. Mike was a kid. How were you? About 8 years old then. He goes, Dad, is there a McDonald's in Traverse City? I still remember that.
All we heard is it snowed all the time. That's the only thing we heard about Traverse City.
I wonder if there was one at that point. That's interesting.
I know there was one.
I think back in the 70s. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So fast forward a little bit. I mean, he made that a reality in mid-1980 in coming to work and actually working for Grand Traverse Auto at that point in time in June of 1980 when Bill was in college. I was entering my last year of high school, and Mike was just about ready to was in middle school. So interesting times.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the middle of your, in essence, growing up,
yeah,
he decided to make the move. It was a combination decision between Julius Sletter and your father then. For him to come and bring the family.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep. So talk a bit more about that, how that started working when your father came to Traverse City.
Well, I think, he worked with at Grand Traverse Auto for about a year and a half. And he eventually, he found an opportunity to buy a dealership here, which was Ward Liebler Buick, which is located where it is today.
Right on Garfield Avenue, where you guys are right now.
Yeah, okay. So, I think he probably missed the ownership, being an owner in the dealership. So he took that opportunity and purchased that dealership in March of 1982. And it was a single-point Buick-only dealership, which was very small, did not sell many cars. I think it was sold less than 10 cars a month, something like that.
And you guys had said in the interview last week that it was dead last in terms of numbers for this area
as a
dealership.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and maybe one of you guys want to talk about the approval process.
Well, at that time...
This is Mike talking.
It's hard to believe, that at that time, if you were a Ford dealer, it was very difficult to get approved to own a GM dealership. And he was still the majority owner of the Ford dealership in the Philadelphia area.
So you had to have some connections, in essence.
Yeah, and he ran into a lot of resistance. And ultimately, he wrote a letter to Buick Motor Division and said, in this market, Buick is in last place. And if I can't take them to first place at the end of the calendar year, you can have your franchise back. Now, whether that would have happened or not, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, he took Buick from last place in registrations in a matter of... 8 months, nine months.
So he laid down the gauntlet, in essence, and said, I can do this thing.
Yeah.
I can take it. Did he actually say that to number one within the year?
That's what he wrote, yeah. And you got to remember, remember the early 1980s, interest rates were like 16, 17%.
They were in the stratosphere.
It was the worst economy.
It was.
And since the war in Michigan, it was
terrible.
So it was Buick, you know, beating out Ford, Chevrolet, all these volume, you know, high volume. Buick at that point in time was not a high volume franchise. So it was really remarkable.
Yeah.
So how did he do that? Do you guys remember much of that?
Well, obviously, I remember one
30 years ago.
One significant part of that was Buick sold more expensive vehicles. They sold the Riviera, the LeSabre, the Park Avenue, and he felt that selling volume was critical. And so he visited any Buick dealership that sold high volume, and he took detailed notes on exactly what they stocked. And the Buick Skyhawk and the Buick Century were two lower priced cars that competed directly with Chevrolet and Ford. And that's what he went after. And his marketing campaign was, why buy a Ford Chevy import when you can buy a really exciting Bill Marsh Buick? Yeah. And in 1985, just a few years later, Bill Marsh Buick was the number one Skyhawk retailer in the country and number three in Buick Century.
Wow.
And so that's how they did it. They didn't sell high volume expensive cars. Right. They really went after the lower end of the market.
So he took on, in essence, the student in the beginning because he was learning from other top-performing Buick dealerships to say, what do I need to do to make this work here in Traverse City?
That's a really important point that we talk about with my father, is if somebody was doing something that was unique or interesting or successful, he was on a plane generally and visiting that store. He was a student. He was afraid to go out there
and say, hey, can I take a look at your dealership?
Mm-hmm. Right up until the time he left the business. You know, a lot of business owners, once they get to a certain level of success, can say, hey, you know, there can be a certain amount of complacency, maybe arrogance, know-it-all. And my dad used to insist that the day that you think you've got this all figured out, you know, get out of the business. You're always learning. And it was a great lesson that he shared with us.
It's awesome. Yeah. So it's still, obviously, the way you're sharing that, it means something still to you today.
Yes. Right. Yes, awesome. It does. Yeah.
So then he went from zero, in essence, to hero within that same year, went to number one in this area.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And he only had, how many employees did he have? Like maybe, I don't know, five or 10?
Yeah. Maybe a dozen. ten probably was the most, yeah. Yeah,
and, but so. He had so much. He was used to the Philadelphia market. He was a small dealer in this massive suburban market, and so he had all this pent up marketing energy and ideas that he couldn't. One night in the paper in the Philadelphia area was more than an entire mass media budget for Northern Michigan. So all of a sudden he realized, I can do all these creative things. I can merchandise. I can be a big fish in a smaller pond. And he just kind of unleashed it on Traverse City in those times. And then, you know, not only got obtained market leadership, but held on to it for years with Buick.
So he referred to himself as a dreamer. So that's kind of exactly what he was thinking about all these different things, and he'd thought about them a lot. You know, and probably had some counsel about that as well in terms of growing a business.
Yes. Definitely.
Then in transition, and I think what's interesting is what year in terms of transition, I'm going to step ahead a bit. What year did your father, Bill Marsh Sr., begin the transition process? Do you remember exactly when that was or about what year he began to talk about it with you guys?
Well, we... the three of us worked pretty closely in Traverse City. There's a lot of history between the formation of the business and up through the 90s and some of the growth, you know, while he owned the business himself. But I guess I would say sometime in the early 2000s, you know, we were working as a good family management team with three of us, plus my dad, plus his right-hand man, Kevin Foster, who was with him for years and actually was a key part of the business. We were a management team, you know, for a number of years. We learned a lot during that time period. And I would say during that early 2000s time period, he could see that we were interested in the business. Hopefully he saw that we were capable of maybe that this transition could happen.
Yeah, so he had some time to test you guys, in essence.
Yeah, he did. And we learned a lot. We went to a lot of, you know, automotive you know, seminars, conferences, 20 groups, things like that, and worked hard together. So I think that really started in his mind that, hey, I need to start thinking about how this can transition successfully.
So about 2000 or so then is what you recall in terms of that beginning of the transition.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that, you know, that took a number of years, but he thought things through very you know, very carefully, and have just applied a lot of wisdom to the decision making and the preparation process.
So in some ways, obviously, he was a hard charging business owner, but in terms of transition, he almost sounds like he really stepped back and was more thoughtful about that. Go ahead,
even
Mike.
You think it's important to note that we did not grow up thinking we were going to get involved in the business. He was very concerned about children getting involved in the business, and so we each did our own way of getting involved in the business. But it was a clear message that if we were going to get involved, we were going to work our tails off, and we were going to have to be good at it. So there was a time period there before the formal transition that I think there was some observation, if you will, from Dad, and some working on our part to make sure we could do this.
So there wasn't any question of what was going to be expected for you guys to be involved in the business of you.
Yeah, I think he was very concerned about nepotism, because there's a lot of stories and statistics on second generation businesses that are passed on that sort of fade and falter. Not just in performance wise, but also as the culture of the company with acceptance by employees. And he was very concerned about that. So his message kind of was, you know, he never really pushed us getting into business. But when we expressed interest in it, he was kind of like, well, I'd love to have you join this business, but there's going to be a lot expected of you.
And you guys better be ready.
Better be ready, essence. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Bill and I had a unique experience in
Bill Jr.,
yeah, Bill okay. Jr. and I in owning and operating Marsh Brothers Ford down in Honor in Benzie County.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to get to. In 1986 is when that started?
Okay. 1986, you know, we were pretty fresh out of college, and we didn't have a dollar to our name, and we didn't really know what we were doing too much. But you know,
so he said, jump in the water, guys. Here we go.
He put up the money, and we went out there. We got approved by Ford Motor Company. And again, it was one of those stories where it was a tiny, tiny dealership selling 5 or 10 cars a month, and we went out there in our early 20s and gave it all we had.
Yeah,
I don't know how successful we were in terms of making a profit, but we sure sold a lot of cars and we learned a lot, and we had a lot of fun.
We had a lot of energy.
And and Mike, Mike had the experience of working in the car business in elsewhere, in Florida and out in Denver, Colorado. So you know, by the time we started to come into the business here in Traverse City, you know, we all had some meaningful experience on our own or elsewhere that I think helped. And he encouraged that. So.
Yeah. Well, obviously, there's dinner table conversations, too, where you guys are kind of coming along with this whole thing.
Yes.
And he's probably talking about that. And that was always a custom of his to be home for dinner, correct?
Well, going back when we were kids, he worked a lot of hours in Newtown, Pennsylvania. The dealership sort of, everybody shopped for cars back then in suburban Philadelphia in the evening. I think that's probably still the case in a lot of markets. And so he oftentimes wouldn't get home until 9 or 10 at night. So my mom insisted that he come home for dinner to keep that family, to keep connections, you know, our connection going. And that was a really wise move on her part. And it was a challenge for him, because it was he had to drive home and he would have dinner with us and he would go back. But it was really a great tradition that he started, and it really bonded our family. Even though he worked a lot of hours, we didn't feel like he was an absentee dad at all, because he really prioritized family.
That's awesome. So in terms of Honor Ford, can you go into some detail of, there was a competition way back because there were some issues with county line dealerships and that. Go into that, would you?
Well,
that story.
My dad was always looking for, he was a marketer, classic marketer, and he was always looking for unique opportunities to promote vehicles. And he found out, you know, you can't, by franchise laws, we couldn't represent and sell Fords, have Fords sitting in Grand Traverse County, and he couldn't have Buicks in Benzie County because you're running into franchise laws. Well, he found out that, I think it was a local mechanical contracting company, owned the property right on the county line. So he went to them. They were customers of ours, and he asked if he could rent the property. So he called it the County Line Shootout. and we literally, it was like a two-day event. And he brought the all those Buicks to the one, and GMCs, we had GMC truck back then, to the one edge, and we brought our fours to the other, and we had like a 2-day sale. We had a riot.
In the dirt.
Yeah. I don't think his salespeople really liked it very, because they were selling cars out of the dirt. For us, it was an opportunity to, you know, put our name in the map.
Sure.
We had a lot of fun.
So it was a lot more fun for you guys maybe than for the Buick people.
I don't think the Buick guys liked
No.
it.
Yeah, now Ron's got something.
We have a couple folks on the line that want to have a story about the Marsh Brothers. You'll know, but we have to have headphones in the studio, I think. Do all you three guys have headphones there? Dennis, I'm going to...
I'll do without. I'm okay.
I've got a... I'll have to rig this somehow, because you're talking about marketing, and there's a guy on the phone here. Steve Cook is our production director at Traverse City, or I should at WTCM. Worked with all the Marsh Brothers, worked with Bill Marsh, and over the years on radio spots. So I'm going to put Steve on.
Awesome.
And then I'll have to rig this, Dennis, so I'm going to hold these up like that.
Okay, great.
All right, let's go to Mr. Steve Cook.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Steve.
I was just curious. I was listening this morning, and it's just fun to reminisce. I worked with your dad almost from the day he got into Traverse City, and I'm wondering if you guys know the origin of "and thank you."
Well, yeah, that was one of the first ads that he did back in the early 1980s.
Right.
And it was just kind of an afterthought. He got done with the ad, and he had a few seconds left, and he just kind of said, "and thank you." and I don't know whether it was you, Steve, or whoever said, "you know, that sounds pretty good." And
it was actually me and a fellow by the name of Doug Knorr.
Yeah, that's right, Doug. Yeah,
we're in the studio that night, and Doug made the suggestion. He said, "you know, Bill, you always thank a customer when they buy a car. Why don't you thank them in advance?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "and thank you," and that became the trademark, and it still is to this day.
Yeah,
wow,
it was great.
Yeah, it always amazes me that simple phrase. People who've been around Traverse City for a long time in the dealership, they'll still remember that. And thank you.
Oh,
we
absolutely.
Still, when we do radio, we still do that. We still say that as well.
Yeah. And also, you were talking about Marsh Brothers Honor Ford. Back in the day, we did a spoof ad of that dealership. And I think you guys have heard it before, but, you know, both of you guys were so young. We did an ad, and the tagline on it was, "come on out, because when we play trucks, we really play trucks."
I remember that. Oh, man, that was a long time ago. That was
a
lot of fun.
That was a long time ago. Well, anyway, and thank you, guys. It's fun listening.
Hey, thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Here, let's get back to Dennis and the Marsh Brothers on New Retirement Radio on WTCM.
Great. All right, thank you. So, man, great memories, obviously, by a lot of people associated with the Marshes. So that Honor Ford competition was a ton of fun. And how long then did you guys wind up owning that business? And then how did you begin to transition back over to Traverse City? What did that look like?
Well, we transitioned. What, you transitioned first?
I did in 1998.
No, it was 93.
I'm sorry. I transitioned in 1993.
Yeah. Okay.
We actually closed that business in 1998.
Okay.
So Bill had stayed a little bit longer, and there's another story behind that in terms of why we did. But, you know,
strategic.
We knew that...
It was kind of a Ford directive.
Yeah, it was
as well.
Kind of a Ford-mandated thing in terms of markets and that. But anyway, we... we knew that our future was here in Traverse City, long-term future. So, you know, we transitioned, and then Mike joined in, what year, Mike, was that?
Well, in 1990, I moved up.
Saturn.
Yeah. And then really when Saturn started in 92.
Yeah.
Okay. So he the opportunity was there, and probably he needed you in the dealership back in Traverse City then. Would that be accurate as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. He, you know, that was, what, 92 we got Saturn, and then 93 we were consolidated into our current complex, and we were just, you know, he was always dreaming and planning and initiating change, and was that part of his that era of the business really included us, and that's when, you know, we really came together and started in Traverse City.
And not all this was easy. You talked about the Saturn situation in some detail. Tell us about that. What happened there with the Saturn dealership?
Well, Saturn was an enormous success initially nationwide. And for us, it really was beyond just selling a lot of vehicles. It transformed our company culture, you know, from the no negotiation to so much of the values that Saturn brought into the dealership.
That, so you guys embraced those values.
Yes, we did. In fact, we transitioned to negotiation free in 1997 after a very positive experience with Saturn. Yeah. Saturn had a philosophy: if you want to retain your customers, you have to retain your staff. And they were very successful because of that, and so we adopted that, and it's been very successful. The transition when Saturn closed in 2009, that was a shame. It was a part of GM, a smaller division in GM, and after the financial crisis, they closed Saturn, and that was a big blow to our organization more so than other organizations because it was a huge part of our company.
It was a very big selling car in Traverse City. I mean, we dominated the small car market.
We sure did.
Incredibly
years with Saturn.
Vehicle.
Yeah, we had a dedicated, beautiful facility just for Saturn, and you know that was a dark day when they announced that Saturn was closing down. I remember that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it took you a while to recover from that, obviously you guys did.
We did.
And you used what you had learned from the Saturn experience to transition all your other dealerships, and it sounds like it was helpful. Perhaps I'm kind of jumping ahead in the transition with your father as well, maybe to you guys too, in terms of the business. Were there any things that were helpful there that maybe helped him too to see the value in that for you guys learning all of those things?
Well, I think the value was the training. It was new to all of us. For us, we went at least 2 weeks. Everybody at Saturn went down for a week of culture and values training. But for us, it was ongoing training in terms of the culture that Saturn created. And so in that regard, it was a great thing for all of us to learn at the same time. Mm-hmm. And really has impacted how, you know, the values with which we operate the business today.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Dad always used to say, you know, we're not in the car business. We're in the people business. We're in the relationship business. And Saturn really, I mean, that was true regardless, but Saturn lived that out in a way that the car business had never done before. A lot of the things that, you know, the reputation that the car business had developed, Saturn turned the tables on and really changed. And it was kind of a renaissance for Bill Sr., for my dad, in terms of embracing that. And so
it went back to all the values he knew he wanted probably to have or inculcate into all the employees in the company anyway.
Yeah.
And that perhaps helped him do that.
Yeah.
By being the vehicle, no pun intended.
Yep.
To make that happen.
Yep. Yeah.
So we need to take a break. Go ahead, Mike. What?
To say Dad drank the Kool-Aid of Saturn. It was,
he loved
really everything about it.
Yeah.
Did he really?
Yes, all kinds of crazy things. Remember the trust falls that we would have?
And
all these experiential learning he brought back because that's what we did when we went out to Saturn. I thought some of our technicians were going to quit.
Yeah.
They're like, we're doing what?
Kind of on the edge, eh?
Yeah.
But it was a culture of respect for each other and for the customer and a culture of transparency and just things that he really bought into. And it was a great, it provided a platform for, like we said, for the rest of the group. So.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio with Dennis Prout of Prout Financial Design with a special edition today looking at business transitioning from one generation to the next. Back to Mr. Dennis Prout and special guests.
You bet. Thanks, Ron. We've got Bill Marsh Jr., Jamie Marsh, and Mike Marsh with us. Welcome again, gentlemen. Pleasure having you here. Hearing the stories, you bet. So next part we want to get into is the transitions, what that was like when your father started talking to you guys. And there are a total of 5 children, correct?
Yes.
Including you, then there's Dan, who runs obviously Red Ginger.
Right.
But then your sister
Terry. Who lives in Casper, Wyoming.
Okay.
And she was the oldest. She was the only girl in the family, the oldest. And, you know, there was a lot of testosterone in our family growing up, put it that way. And she did not she did not appreciate us. Back then. So she moved. We love. We joke because she moved as far away as she could.
Yeah.
Eastern Wyoming. But we have a great relationship now.
Awesome. She's forgiven you guys.
She's forgiven us.
That's awesome.
We deserve it.
Yeah. So in essence, then, when your father started talking about transitions, tell us about that, what that was like for you and the timing that he took, the time that he took and the people that he counseled with.
Yeah.
Well, I think he, a lot of wisdom, but also a lot of humility in terms of the way he thought this through. I mean, because I think a lot of business owners just maybe try to figure this out on their own. And with us, with our situation, with three of us, that presents another challenge. And typically what you might find in a situation like that is maybe the owner, in that case my dad, has to pick one of us to say, okay, which one of you is going to be the boss, the majority stockholder, whatever the case may be. And I don't know that he was sure about that. So he sought a lot of counsel from, whether it's his attorney, the accountant, a local fellow by the name of Dan Wolf and his colleague Bill Beal, Dewar Sloan. They did a great job in interviewing us and interviewing Dad, interviewing Kevin Foster, who was part of equity part of the business at that point in time, and really, really taking a deep dive and getting to know all of us and our strengths and weaknesses. And that they came to the conclusion, these people that he enlisted to counsel, that they felt it was possible for us to have an equal partnership. There didn't have to be like a number one person. And they turned out to be right, which was very unusual. I think my dad was a little bit surprised by that, but I think he was also pretty happy about it.
Absolutely.
He didn't have to make that decision to say who's going to be number one.
So possibly his preconceived notion was that one of you guys were going to have to be the final decision maker when it came to having even a partnership between three brothers.
Mm-hmm. Because that's a typical structure in most,
sure,
in
absolutely,
most family business transitions with siblings involved.
Yeah.
In addition, many families, when children are involved in business, they'll take a store separately or siloed stores. And we kept the organization together. So we operate it in functions in terms of our areas, especially within the business, but as one organization. And I think that brings a lot of strength to the organization as opposed to competing dealerships.
Mm-hmm. So, in essence, whether you wanted to or not, you were together and you had to work out some of the details and some of the difficulties. Would that be accurate as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, we looked at the company and ran it as a whole. And part of it's because, we're growing up, we know each other, and we're all different. If we were all the same personalities, it probably wouldn't work.
It'd be tough.
But we're all different. We all have different strengths, different weaknesses, and different interests. And so that's.
So, your dad helped foster that. I want to interrupt that, but it sounded like he fostered that as well. He appreciated that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like, awesome. I know growing up, I couldn't. Lefty loosey, righty tighty was about the extent of my, still is, my mechanical knowledge. And Jamie got all that. He naturally, like when we ran the dealership in Honor, he ran service and parts and I ran sales.
Okay.
And and then when Mike came in, and then I shifted to marketing. And then, today Mike oversees all of our sales operations. I oversee marketing and e-commerce. Jamie oversees fixed operations. So
operations, what's that?
Which is service and parts. And
service and parts. Yeah. Okay. So you're able still then to move toward your strengths.
Yes.
Your God-given strengths, if you will.
Yes.
And move toward those within the dealership itself.
Yes.
And it works in terms of decision-making too, then.
It really does.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a question, you bet.
Yeah. Because again, in a dealership, we now have, 315 employees and mm-hmm. multiple business units. So typically in an organization our size that's owned by multiple siblings, each one has a separate part of the business. And it's almost like this competitive atmosphere. And they don't speak with one voice. Whereas because of we're brothers and we're close and we work closely together, we work as a team and we speak with one voice. And it really helps the culture.
Awesome. And obviously everybody knows that too within your organization.
Yeah.
Now, talk about that in terms of the size the dealership was approximately when the transition started in 2000 versus where it is now. Do you recall about how many employees it was at that point versus what it is now?
Well, and the transition actually took place in 2005.
Okay.
And, I guess you could look at it since 2005. We've added the locations in Kalkaska and Gaylord, and another brake and alignment business here in Traverse City, along with a used car franchise business we have called Byrider that we have a location here in Saginaw, and also one coming in Grand Rapids. So I think if you looked at that, in 2005, we probably had maybe 150 employees, 100 and somewhere.
So about half, perhaps, of what you have right now, in a 15-year period or so since 2005.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Your dad began transitioning the business in 2000, but the full transition to you sons, if you will, took place in 2005?
Yeah, correct.
Now, it took you some time. In essence, you financed it through the business, correct, in paying dad out?
Yes. Yes.
Go into some detail, if you would. How did that work? What did that look like?
Well, I mean, it was a formal arrangement, certainly, you know, in terms of the way it was structured. And, you know, we look at it like, you know, we were given a couple of really powerful, great gifts from Dad. One was a great opportunity. I mean, just an opportunity to live here and own and operate a great business and to grow it. The other was that we purchased the business from him. We got a good deal on it. I mean, you know, we bought
it. So we gave you guys a good price.
We bought it in less than market value. There's no question about that.
Okay.
But you know, he had the benefit. He used to tell us this a lot: is that a great time in his life was watching us when he was still had a hand in the business in an advisory role. But he didn't have the day-to-day responsibility, so that was gratifying for him to see that. So
he really enjoyed that transition, too.
He did. But I don't think he was he didn't sell us the business because he was ready to quote, retire. He sold us the business because he felt it was time for him to step aside and us to move in.
Now, that's key. He wasn't ready. He enjoyed it that much. So perhaps what you're saying is he was kind of torn as well because he loved it that much. Even though you're talking about his sons, there were some difficult transitions in his own mind that he had to make. Would that be accurate?
He took from a Machiavellian term. Says power can't be given, it must be taken. And I think it was important. I think he understood that if he was involved and us, you know, where would people's, not loyalties, but who called the shots? I think it was critical timing for him to step aside, even though he's very much enjoyed the business. It was an unselfish move to step aside or step back, if you will, and counsel us as opposed to leading from the front.
The show, right?
Yeah.
So we had a lot of counsel, a lot of help from the legal side, valuation in terms of keeping it tight, if you will, from a legal standpoint. But then he also was able to think about your two siblings who weren't in the business. Tell us how that worked. What he did for that in that situation.
You know, he never really, it's funny, in 2005, it's not like he retired and just stayed home. Our brother Dan and his wife Pam, they started the formation of Red Ginger probably a year and a half to 2 years before it actually opened in 2007. And my dad was very interested in kind of helping them with that. So that was something that he kind of dug into after he sold us the business. Cool. So that was a great thing for him and for them. And then he didn't retire. And even after that got going, he just had other interests. He was not the kind of guy that would just kind of sit at home and say, I'm going to go play golf today or just, you know.
He was going.
He was going, yeah.
But he spent a lot of time. I remember coming in, he always worked at night. I remember coming into his office at times. He'd be there late at night. Just really thinking about and working and making sure that this transition was equitable and fair for everybody involved. Because, you know, a lot of family businesses that transition, if that doesn't happen, it can create a lot of hard feelings. The last thing he wanted, because he always used to say, family, if this business ever breaks up our family, I'm going to sell it. He used to say that, remember?
Yeah, it was very transparent to us.
Yeah, he was passionate about that.
Yeah.
Family always came first.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mike,
it was transparent to all of us. We talked about it, you know, and which probably you would know better, but probably doesn't happen. He was very, very forthright in terms of his thoughts and sharing them with us and having dialogue about it.
It's awesome. Yeah. You never had to guess where Dad was.
No.
It's awesome.
So he got, to answer one of your other questions, I mean, our two siblings that are not involved in the business, they got an interest in the business real estate.
Okay.
That's where some of that fairness came in, which we then subsequently purchased from them. So when you think about that, that was some of the wisdom and the genius that he had, that he was able to make this among all five of us. You know, we got a great opportunity to buy the business for a great deal. You know, they got some interest in the real estate and with the communication and transparency. It, I don't know that it could have worked out better, frankly.
So. Awesome.
And we're close as a family, and have always been. And a lot of that is, you know, a lot of it certainly was modeled to us by our parents. You know, yeah. Hearing about my mom, she was the real rock.
Well, that's a really interesting point. Dad would get very emotional talking about mom when the company was growing and he was talking to the employees because she. Yeah, it was her support that leveraged all of his strengths to focus on,
really?
On business.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So she, in essence, obviously your dad had the skills and strengths and talents, but she was the driving force, in essence, behind all of it.
Yeah.
She supported that.
She did.
With her own strength.
And he was very comfortable saying that he never could have done it without my mom.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Wrap us up, Ron. Here we go.
All right. We will wrap it up here. Thanks to the Marsh Brothers for being in all three of them in one place today. That's great. Thanks to Dennis Prout. This will be on the Prout Financial Design website if you want to hear the show. And as always, proutfinancialdesign.com for any contact information or to catch up on any of these.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.